welcome to the Stay at Home School Mom podcast. My name is Mary Ellen Barrett, and I am joined here by my podcast partner and dear friend, Ginny Seufert. And we are delighted to be joined by a wonderful guest. I'm so excited to have her. You're going to love her. She's terrific. But first, let me thank our sponsor, Seton Home Study School. They are the premier provider of Catholic home education materials to homeschooling families around the world for 40 plus years. Please check out their website at www.setonhome.org for more information. They have a beginner's guide, and I think it's about an 8-minute video you can watch and get all the details. And there's some coupon code at the end that you can use for a little bit of a discount. They are fully accredited pre-K through 12. Distance learning school, and I think they're one of the few in the world that do that. So let us begin. Ginny, you want to introduce our very special guest?
We are thrilled, Mary Ellen and I, to have Kimberly Begg. She's a Catholic wife. She's a mother of 5 kids. She's an attorney with more than 20 years of experience strengthening Catholic and conservative causes. She helped found, this is going to go on for a while, guys. Everybody, you know, take a sip. She's very accomplished. She has helped found the Young Americas Foundation Standing Up for Faith and Freedom Seminar. That's a program for students in Catholic schools. She serves on the boards of numerous centers and foundations dedicated to Catholic and conservative principles. She's editor of the Catholic School Playbook. This is an online resource for the renewal of Catholic education. And when I knew we were going to have her on, I went and checked out the website. It's really cool, guys. For those of you that are interested in Catholic schools, I definitely suggest you take a look at the Catholic School Playbook. Kimberly, welcome. We are thrilled to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about your new book, published by TAN. It's called Unbreakable, Saints Who Inspire Saints to Moral Courage. So let me say that again. Unbreakable, Saints Who Inspired Saints to Moral Courage. And at the end of the podcast, we're going to tell you how you can win a free copy of this book.
Welcome, thank Kimberly.
Thank you. Thank you, Ginny. Thank you, Mary Ellen. I'm just really, really excited to be here talking to you today.
I'm excited to talk about moral courage. I've been writing about this a lot lately and thinking about this a lot lately because particularly when it comes to like leadership in our country and things, there's so little of it. There's so little of it. And your book is so unique, I think, in that when you get the book, listeners, and you read it, it's not only saint stories and the stories of how these wonderful saints, Saint Joan of Arc, Saint Teresa of Calcutta,
Popielski, I think is how they say it.
Popielski, right? It's Blessed Jerzy Popielski.
Okay. And it's the saints that inspired them. So you go into, it's about 14 saints in the book, and it's such a unique perspective because we're used to reading saint stories and how holy they were and how, but who inspired them to this holiness and how did they come by this holiness? And what, I just thought that was extraordinary. That was a great perspective. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, there are a lot of ways that I can answer that question. I might start with a presentation that I gave to an audience of high school and college students at Young America's Foundation a few years ago. It was a presentation on Blessed Jerzy Popielski. He has been a longtime favorite saint of mine. And if you're not familiar with his story, he is the courageous chaplain of the Solidarity Movement in communist Poland after World War II. And what made him so courageous was knowing that his life was in danger after being harassed and arrested and interrogated and framed by the communists in communist Poland, he continued to stand up and give these wonderful masses for the fatherland in Poland, where he would help people in Poland see through the lies of communist Poland. And 20,000 or more people would come to attend these masses in person. And then his friends would jot down his message and they would publish them in underground newspapers throughout Poland and throughout the Eastern Bloc. And they would rebroadcast his homilies on Radio Free Europe. And this is how the rest of the world got to know Father Jerzy. Well, knowing that his life was in danger, he continued to do this. He was hunted down eventually, and he was murdered by the communists in Poland. But when I learned that
he was
yes, he was tortured. He was thrown in the Vistula River. It was absolutely awful. And the Polish people had such a wonderful, great love for this courageous man, who, by the way, was such a promoter of peace. You know, he wanted peaceful protest. He was a man of God through and through. But when I was doing my research for this presentation, and I learned that his favorite saint his entire life, whom he learned about as a boy visiting his grandmother's house and reading the Knights of the Immaculata newspaper, was Saint Maximilian Kolbe. And when I made this realization, his whole life just started to make sense for me. All of the courageous moments throughout his life started to make sense. And then throughout his life, he discovered the wonderful and holy writings and sermons of Cardinal Stefan Wyszynski. He became inspired by Pope John Paul II. And you can see the inspirations of these wonderful and important messages for the times in all of the homilies that he gave throughout his life and in all of his actions. So
I'm sorry. I loved that whole section because I had never heard of Blessed Jerzy. I'm never going to say it right. I'm Irish. We pronounce Jerzy. Nothing correctly. Jerzy. But
I'm old enough to remember him. And when
do you? See, I probably should. And this was one of these.
You're younger.
Humbling moments, homeschool mother moments, is that my oldest daughter has a great devotion to St. John Paul II and Maximilian Kolbe. She's visited Auschwitz, she's visited his home and all that kind of stuff. And so I showed her the book and I showed her this and she's like, yeah, I knew who he was. Like, and she's spouting off all this stuff about him. And I'm like, oh God, goodness. She did not learn that from me. Heavens. Because she
did a better job than you thought.
Well, she explored it herself, which is kind of what, you know, you kind of teach them to learn kind of a thing. But I was embarrassed because I didn't know anything about him. But now I want to, you know, I'm reading your book aloud to my children now because I think it's so important.
I think it's so important too. You know, one of the really interesting aspects of the research that I've done has been to find out that some of the favorite saints of some of the church's most courageous saints have been saints that we haven't been all that familiar with. Mm. You know, so Joan of Arc is a great example. So we are all familiar with St. Michael, the Archangel. We all love St. Michael. And we knew, and most of us know the story of how St. Michael inspired and interceded for St. Joan of Arc during her journey, her very interesting journey as a teenager. But very few of us are familiar with the teenage martyrs, the early fourth century martyrs, victims of the Diocletian persecutions who inspired her and who also visited her on her journey. Mm-hmm. So, you know, part of the motivation to answer your wonderful initial question, part of the motivation, you know, was to tell the stories of the saints who inspired saints, because all of us know that the reason we pass on these stories to our children about the saints is not only to let them appreciate that the church's very rich history, but also because we are trying to raise saints. And we all know that saints inspire saints, but having the stories told in this way, I think really drives home that point. But, you know, the other motivation, which I think is really important, and one of the reasons I'm so happy to be talking to you ladies about this is because I know this is really important to both of you, is because we are living in a world right now where a lot of Catholics are trying to find a way around the cross for themselves and their children. Yes. And it's really because a lot of them are not realizing, you know, what it means to be a Catholic, what it means to be a Christian, and, you know, to know that you are a child of God and to know that you have certain duties in this world. And your first duty has to be serving God and then serving the people that he puts in your life. So that means your husband, if you're married, your children, and just the other people that, you know, he puts in your path, in your community. But because I think so many of us have lost sight and are so focused on the earthly pleasures and earthly distractions of the world, people are trying to find a way around the cross. But this idea that our path to heaven can ever be free of suffering and sacrifices has absolutely no grounding in sacred scripture, and it has no grounding in the church's very rich traditions. And as Catholics, one of the greatest traditions we have are the stories of the saints.
Yeah, you wrote, I think it was in the preface or the introduction, that Catholic saint stories are the birthright of Catholic children. And I wrote that in my commonplace because that was just so astonishingly like profound to me, and simple, but profound, that yes, they need these stories because we are so geared toward comfort in our world here now, especially American children. You wrote somewhere, I think, that like 73% of American parents think that children, oh, I think it was in your study guide, 73% of American parents surveyed said that happiness was their goal for children. They're raising their children. That was happiness. Well, yeah, that's all very nice. Of course, we all want everybody to be happy, but it's not what we're made for in terms of our Catholicism and getting to heaven. It's not like, like you said, we have to go through the cross. We do. And I just took a class on the letter of St. Paul to the Romans, taught by a biblical scholar who happened to be visiting my parish for a few months. So he gave this class. And when a biblical scholar is teaching something, you just go, right? It's free and you go. And a lot of the letter of St. Paul to the Romans is about that. Like, you're going to suffer. You have to suffer, like, and you have to suffer in service to other people. And, you know, these are people who are being persecuted and all this stuff. And they were happy to be persecuted for their faith. And we're not even happy to, like, you know, miss a Starbucks run in this world.
In Catholic homeschooling too. So Mary Ellen and I both kind of deal with Catholic parents, you know, we counsel them, things like that. And the complaints that you'll get, like, my son hates his math book.
No, oh, good Lord, yes.
And this is a major problem in this child's life. This is sacrifice, and or you know, I hate to have to teach this or that. People, you know, Americans. I remind myself whenever I want to complain, I have never been cold. I have never been hungry. I have had the most comfortable life as an American my whole life, really. Even when we were broke in the United States means you still have a phone. Remember Mother Teresa's line, we'll get to her later, but remember Mother Teresa's line, you know, in the United States, the poor have antennas on their roofs. In Calcutta, the poor don't have roofs. Mm-hmm. So we had, and I was a homeschool conference speaker for many, many years. And I used to finish many, many of my talks with just a line from scripture. If anyone wishes to be my follower, he must deny his very self, pick up his cross and follow me. And my very self is the self that wants to be comfortable, that doesn't want to have kids complaining about their math book.
Right.
That, yes. You know, but I have to deny that self. I have to say, nope, got to pick up that. So it's not get around the cross. I can't even stand in front of the cross. I got to pick up that cross and move.
Well, I'm so glad that you quoted that very important line from scripture. In Matthew, the line right before that line is when Jesus is rebuking Peter for telling him, like, no, Lord. After he has heard, getting a little bit of a glimpse of what is going to happen to Jesus, that he will be, that he will suffer, that he will die, and that he will be raised. And in response, Jesus tells him that he is thinking as man does and not as God does. And I think this is something that parents really need to be intentional about. So we need to be providing a Catholic education for our children, you know, whether it be a homeschooling education, whether it be a faithful Catholic school education. But our number one goal needs to be informing their minds, their intellect, their will, so that they are able to see the world as it really is and see the world as God does, not as human beings do. I think that line in the Gospel of Matthew is probably one of the most important for parents to pay attention to, because that absolutely has to be our goal. And as you said, the stories of the saints are a birthright of Catholic children for a reason. You know, Holy Scripture is so important. And the lessons there and the parables and, you know, all the Old Testament readings, everything about scripture is so wonderful, but the church didn't just leave it there. You know, the church gave us saints and preserved the stories of the saints. And we passed on these stories for a long time. And then, you know, wouldn't you know, the 20th century hits. And a lot of us just stopped passing on, you know, so many of the stories of the saints that were so familiar to so many of the most courageous heroes of the church before then. You know, a really good example of that is St. Tarsicius, who was a 12-year-old third century martyr who was killed holding the Blessed Sacrament. He had such a strong devotion to the Blessed Sacrament. And when he was identified as a Christian, and when he was hunted down and killed, he clung to Jesus really present in the Blessed Sacrament. And this was a story that, you know, I tell the story in the second chapter of the book. It's the chapter on the boy Cristero martyr, St. Jose Luis Sanchez del Rio. But St. Tarsicius was well known to all of the Catholics in Mexico in the 1920s. And this is a saint that is largely unfamiliar to us today. But St. Tarsicius inspired Mexicans in the 1920s. And when little Jose at 14 years old was kneeling so reverently at the Cristero camp in front of the Blessed Sacrament, the soldiers, the much older men who saw him just praying so reverently, they gave him the nickname of Tarsicius, because they all knew his story. And then, you know, as St. Jose was in battle, and when he ended up giving General Morphin his horse in order to help the Cristero cause, and the amount of courage that that must have required from little Jose, this young boy, you know, on some level, he had to be thinking of St. Tarsicius and the sacrifice that St. Tarsicius was willing to offer to Christ. And I also believe that St. Tarsicius was interceding for him.
On that note, I'm just going to take 1 minute and give a heads up to our sponsors. And we are going to be right back with more from Kimberly Begg. And we are talking about her book, Unbreakable. Hang on 1 second and let's hear a word from our sponsors. And now we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Benedictine College. Benedictine College is a Newman Guide school located in Atchison, Kansas. It is heir to the 1,500 years of Benedictine dedication to learning. Benedictine College mission as a Catholic Benedictine liberal arts residential college is the education of men and women within a community of faith and scholarship. There are over 50 undergraduate programs, 2 master's degree programs, and they are located on a beautiful, beautiful campus. Please check out their website at benedictine.edu for more information about student life, faith life, admissions, financial aid, athletics, and a variety of other things. You can even schedule a visit to the campus on the website. So again, check them out at benedictine.edu. And thank you, Benedictine College, for sponsoring the Stay at Home Schooling Mom podcast.
And we are back. Thank you so much to our sponsors. Seton Home Study School is our main sponsor here on the podcast, and we are very grateful, but we do have a lot of other sponsors, and we are very, very grateful to them. So if you don't mind, please heading over to their website and giving and checking them out. We would be really, really appreciative, because when you do that, they will continue to sponsor us, and we do rely on their good friendship with us, and we hope to have them as friends for a long time to come. So Kimberly Begg wrote an incredibly inspirational book, and from a really good perspective. It's called Unbreakable, Stories of the Saints Who Inspired Saints. And we are talking to her about the courage, the moral courage, really, of some of these saints and how they gained that moral courage from the saints that inspired them. So, Ginny, you were about to say something when I cut you off to go to break. I'm so sorry.
No, I barely remember because I'm old. But, well, one thing that I'd like to just point out, we're talking here a lot about how the saints learned the sacrifice and how they were inspired to learn the sacrifice. And I'd like to continue that. But I would like to just throw out, for years, when people have said to me the Catholic Church holds down women, I've always used St. Joan of Arc. She is the only woman, to my knowledge, in the history of the world that commanded the forces of a major nation. And she did it when she was 19 years old. So our Catholic saints are not, it's not just men who had all the power. some of the women in our church have been extremely powerful. You talked about a couple of them. One of them was, of course, my favorite Mother Teresa of Calcutta. I love her so much. I think one of the things that we want to remember, and I'm so happy you did this in your book, is you gave us saints who we can find pictures of, like photographs. We can find.
I can remember.
I'm old enough to remember. I remember saying to people around me, never, ever, ever tell a Polish joke to me again, ever as long as you live. These people have the courage. Americans didn't have it at that time. We're all, you know, sitting home smoking dope or something. And they were the solidarity movement. The solidarity movement was this incredible courage.
Oh, the Polish people are devout and courageous. I mean,
oh my word.
It's incredible. At the
time, I remember seeing this and being so inspired by it. And if you went to a Polish church in those days for daily mass at 6 o'clock in the morning, you couldn't get a seat. They were standing outside next to the doors.
Yeah,
kneeling, by the way, on the concrete during the consecration.
Yes, the Polish have been expert preservers of their heritage throughout the years. And the way that they have done that is by being very intentional in educating their children to know Polish history and to know their Catholic faith. So at the turn of the century, at the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, when during the 123-year partition of Poland, in the Russian-occupied portion of Poland, Russia took over the schools. And they tried to completely wipe out Polish culture. And the parents responded by being very intentional about giving their kids a Polish education at home. The exact same thing happened after World War II. When the communists were in charge of Poland. So again, the Marxists took over the schools. They instituted a universal Marxist curriculum, made all school mandatory. And so Polish children were forced by law, and their parents were threatened with breaking the law if they did not send their children to school. So they were forced by law to attend these schools that completely filtered the truth of Catholicism, you know, out of the curriculum and completely ignored the reality of their Catholic faith. And sure enough, what the Polish parents did, again, was to be very intentional about reading Polish literature in their homes, passing on true Polish history, not the lies that they were being taught in school, and always going to mass, reading the Gospels at home, sharing the stories of the saints.
Saying the rosary.
Yeah, I'm praying. I just want to point out, because it just popped into my head, the scholarship in this book is so well done. And you can tell that you're a lawyer, you're an attorney, because the research is impeccable.
Made a case.
Yes, it's impeccable, but it is still eminently readable. I mean, it's not scholarly, you know, dull. Sometimes scholarly books can be dull, you know, we need them, but this is eminently readable. It is told in the form of it's narrative, it's storytelling. Like I said, I'm reading it to my children, who would just get up and leave if they did not like it, and they have it. So I want to just say that when you're reading this book, you will be incredibly impressed by the scholarly approach to it. It's very well researched. It's very well documented. There's the bibliography and everything in the back. You can, you know, check all your facts. And so I found that very impressive.
Study guide also available.
And there's a study guide on Kimberly's website as well.
I really appreciate you saying that, because I wrote this book for parents. I wrote this book for you ladies, you know, the kind of people who would be listening to your podcast. And I wrote it for me and my friends and my husband and my children. So many moms and so many dads, we are so busy. We're pulled in a million different directions right now. We live in this very strange digital world where some people don't even have books in their homes anymore. I've actually been in a few homes and you look around and it's very strange not to see books. But I believe that as Catholics, we really do have to be, you know, bringing back that culture of having physical books, having them on our bookshelf so that we can take them down off the shelf, share our books with their children. Our kids today are very used to reading very fast-paced books. Mm-hmm. Harry Potter is huge among kids. I have several children who have loved the Ranger's Apprentice series.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
They're very fast. Yeah. My daughter, who's 11, I think she's read all of them about 3 times. They take up a lot of space on her bookshelves at home, but they're fast-paced. So I knew that I had to write the book in a way that it would be appropriate for read-alouds for little kids. And like you said, to try to keep the attention of kids who are used to getting their information in just a very fast-paced manner. And I also wanted it to be appropriate for read-alouds for age 12 and up, mm-hmm. because kids really do have to develop that habit of reading. And I know it's great that, well, I don't know if it's great that they know characters like Harry Potter and his friends, but, you know, they are so familiar with those heroes. You know, why not give them heroes like Saint Joan of Arc and Saint Jose and Saint Mother Teresa, Blessed Jerzy Popiełuszko? I mean, these saints are more fascinating. Their stories, their real life stories, are so fascinating. And they are the ultimate heroes of the Catholic faith because they did it. They got to see the face of God. They are in heaven. I mean, they are the perfect role models for our children. And their stories are so fascinating. So, like you said, these are the birthright of our Catholic kids. And we really need to pass them on. And I think that we need to pass them on in a way that they're going to be receptive to them.
Absolutely.
But I do think your book too also stressed in many places the role of the family in passing on the faith.
Yeah.
That the parents did this, as you mentioned, the Polish families, but it was other places in the book too, where they deliberately passed on the faith to their children. And this is what we homeschoolers are supposed to be doing too. We're supposed to, it's kind of multifaceted. First of all, we're passing on the faith to our kids. Hopefully, though, we're giving them a rigorous academic education so that they can become Kimberly Begg.
Yeah.
That they can, well, no, really, that they can write a book, or they can become, you know, Antonin Scalia, or they can become the mayor of their town or the governor of their town, or the person who starts a new foundation in their town to care for sick children, or whatever it is. So we want them to be great Catholics. We want them to be academically prepared, and then we want them to be leaders.
Mm-hmm. And to be academically prepared on Christ's terms. Yes. You know, we are about 100 years into the experiment of progressive education, and it has been a complete disaster for the church. It's also been a disaster for the world.
Oh, yeah.
It's especially been a disaster for the church, because we have kids going to schools that call themselves Catholic. And, you know, the kids go to Mass once a week. They wear uniforms. There's crucifixes on the wall. They might celebrate a feast day here and there. But they are largely using a curriculum taken whole cloth from secular society that has no appreciation for who we are as children of God and what our duties are in this life, you know. And it's a system that really fragments knowledge and doesn't allow us to see the beautiful connections in the world, and doesn't allow us to, you know, apply them to the challenges that we face in a way that's going to be helpful to society. And I'm really grateful for the homeschooling movement, because, you know, you all have been just pioneers in bringing back what a real, authentic, faithfully Catholic education is. You know, so much so that there are a lot of schools who are, you know, looking at what you homeschoolers have done for so many years, and bringing in so much of that wisdom, you know, and so much of that focus on virtue that the Catholic Church had been using to educate Catholic children for generations.
That is important to Catholic homeschooling families. And I think it can be important to any family who's Catholic, whatever your educational, you know, desires for your children. Preserving Catholic culture and Catholic morals and Catholic virtues is something that every parent is obligated to do and can certainly do. You can. I know people have sent their children to public school, and these are very devout, wonderful people who've, you know, graduated and gone on to do wonderful things and have nice Catholic families themselves. You can do this, but it takes a lot of work. And like you said, you have to be very intentional about these decisions that you're making for your children to preserve these kinds of things and telling these stories and making these part of your Catholic culture in your home is incredibly important, really incredibly important. You have to make time for that, which means sometimes you have to turn off all these screens or, you know, it really is important. When you were saying you have to be well-educated and academics are important, I was thinking of underground newspapers and things like that. I mean, you have to be well-educated enough to do that kind of thing, because who knows, that might actually happen at some point in our lives. You know, you have to not only prepare to be a leader, I would love to see a real Catholic president or something like that. But it might come to having an underground leader at some point, you know, a solidarity movement of something like that.
Like Valencia, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, we might, right. Because we have been not challenged in America in that way. And I think that's part of what's so incredibly impressive about the Polish people or those Mexican Catholics or so many of the things that you wrote about is those people were challenged. I mean, every 20 years, it was some other regime trying to wipe them off the face of the earth. And those parents just hunkered down and maybe they had their Bible in, you know, buried in the floor somewhere, and they pulled it out every night and they taught their children and under ridiculously hard circumstances. And they just kept at it. And we have not had that in America. We have religious freedom. Supposedly.
One wonders, though, if it's somewhat coming back. We have a pro-life leader being arrested, you know, by a SWAT team in front of his seven kids.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it, the time is sooner than we think.
Well, I think that's such a good point, because the truth is none of us knows what God has in store for us, you know, as a country, as a world, as a church, individually. I have no idea what he has in store for me for the rest of my life. But I think that we all need to be developing good habits early on. And I think these good habits really have to begin in our formative years, in childhood. I have been hearing a lot of Christians, some well-meaning conservatives give, I think, really soul-endangering advice to young people, telling them to keep their heads down, just get through school, get the good grade, don't make any waves. I think this is really, really dangerous, because a young person who keeps their head down for Christ, right, who doesn't stand up for Christ in the world, who practices cowardice and calls it prudence, is not going to develop those habits and be able to be courageous when it really counts out there in the world. So a young person is going to grow up and, you know, most likely get married, have children, be involved in their community, and they're going to lack the ability to draw from their own experiences of being courageous in the world. And their families are going to suffer, and the whole world and our church is going to suffer because of it.
That's a very good point. When you send the kid to college and you say, oh, just go along to get the grade, don't argue with the professor, especially, you know, like I live in the socialist state of New York, and I've had kids go to, you know, New York colleges, just, and it's very easy to say, oh, you don't want to ruin your 4.0, you know, but they have to learn how to fight this. A 4.0 doesn't mean anything in heaven. It doesn't. No, St. Peter does not care. He's not going to let you
can't
in.
Stand at the gate and say, listen, I had a 4.0 from SUNY. So here we are. Well, Kimberly, you've been great, but I have to tell you, before we let you go, you had my favorite saint, my personal favorite saint in your book, last chapter. Absolutely love St. Mother Teresa of Calcutta. And the reason I think this means so much to our Catholic homeschool moms, because some of us may think, well, listen, I'm not getting an army up and, you know, going to defeat the British so the Dauphin can sit on the throne of France. I'm just a homeschool mom and I barely have time to say my rosary. And how can I develop all this wonderful spirituality that everybody talks about all the time, even in books that we read? And I think, oh, how can I do this? And Mother Teresa, and of course, her inspiration, St. Therese the Little Flower, St. Therese of Lisieux, their little way makes it's so doable by anybody. Anybody can follow the little way.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the little way is to do everything for Christ. And that means never denying a truth of an evil that you see out there in the world. So the issue that that chapter really focuses on is just the absolute tragedy of the spread of abortion and abortion culture. And one of the most beautiful parts of Mother Teresa's story is that she considered the poorest of the poor in the world to be not only those who are suffering physically, but also those who are suffering spiritually. Her heart broke for the little babies who were being slaughtered in their mother's wombs. And her heart also broke for those mothers who were choosing to kill their own babies and the nations who supported abortion and who claimed that it was a fundamental human right, you know, turning sin right on its head and calling it virtue and calling it a fundamental right, which fast forward all these years later is now being celebrated as something good and, you know, something that we should be very proud of. You know, back when I was growing up, it was the message was abortion should be, you know, legal, safe and rare.
Safe, right? Legal and rare. Safe,
yeah. There we go. And so this was the environment that Mother Teresa was living in. And it was an environment that was, you know, really just distorting what it means to be a woman in society and pitting women against men, putting them against their husbands, pitting them against their own children. And so, you know, she came out there and very courageously talked about God's plan for each of his children, God's plan for all human beings made in the image and likeness of God and the complementarity of the sexes. We are not in competition with our husbands. We are not in competition with men. You know, God wants us to live in harmony in his ordered world, you know, according to the laws of human nature, which are written on our hearts. And she saw that, and she knew that the most important message, what the world needed to hear most, was bringing people back to an understanding of what it means to truly love one another. And she knew that it wasn't going to be popular. And when she was given the Nobel Peace Prize in 1979, she knew she was filled with some of the most important, most influential, most powerful people in the world, and also some of the most ardent advocates of abortion. And she still stood up there on an internationally televised audience.
In Norway, where abortion was legal.
Yes, we're exactly right, in Norway. And she called abortion the greatest destroyer of peace in the modern day. And she did the exact same thing in front of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and the world in the 1990s during the Clinton administration, when she was invited to give the prayer to be the keynote speaking at the National Prayer Breakfast. And even though it was her hosts, her very pro-abortion hosts, who invited her and were sitting on stage, you know, she knew that what they needed to hear, you know, them individually as human beings, you know, again, created in the image and likeness of God, but what they needed to hear and what the whole world needed to be here listening to her was that there is truth in the world, that all human beings have dignity, and that we need to be courageous enough to stand up for the dignity of all human life.
Oh, she was fearless in that. She spoke at a St. Pat's Cathedral here in New York once, and I was watching it on TV. It might have been Cardinal O'Connor's funeral or something. It was something like that. And President Clinton and Hillary Clinton were in the front pew, and our senators from New York. It was a bunch of New York people, all pro-abortion. And she did the same thing. And the camera panned to them, and they all looked like they just wanted to be anywhere else. Like, and she was not politically correct. She didn't care who she offended. She was fearless that way.
And she was kind and teeny weeny. Like, she was this tiny little woman. If you ever seen pictures of her, she's like 5 feet tall.
But I mean, she's lived the gospel. She just lived the gospel, and she was fearless about doing it.
And her little way, you know, she and also Saint Therese, they took a vow to deny Christ nothing. And so when it was asked of her to become the celebrity, which she never set out to do, but she became really the most beloved human being in the world. And she was known as a do-gooder, as a humanitarian, and she used that amazing celebrity to advocate for the poorest of the poor, which were abortion victims and supporters of abortion.
This book has to be on your shelves, listeners. I'm going to leave you with, there are, at the end of the book, there's a conclusion section, which is wonderful. And at the end of that, Kimberly leaves us with a list of 10 ways of imitating saints by practicing courage in everyday moments. And very practical, very easy, but I would think pretty life-changing in some ways. So I want you all to buy the book so you can see that. Kimberly, where can they buy the book? What's the best way to do that?
It is on tanbooks.com. It is on Amazon. I also have signed copies available on my website, kimberlybegg.com, where I also have a free 17-page companion study guide that can be downloaded and used for homeschool and school curricula, family discussions, or just personal reflection.
Yeah, I downloaded that and I found it to be very helpful. And I'm going to use it with my kids too. And it was a really good study guide. I think it's going to lead to some good discussion. So that's very, very handy. And we are going to have a giveaway. So stay tuned to the end of the podcast and I will give you details as to how to enter that giveaway. And in the meantime, thank you so much for being with us. Is there another book in the works? Do you have any other work coming up that we can have you back to discuss at some point?
I would love that. The answer is there has to be another book in the works. I enjoyed writing this book so much. It was the best year of my life. I loved having the saints with me just all the time like that. And it's been really fun talking about the book. I've enjoyed that, you know, and, you know, getting to talk to people who have read it. But you know what? When it was just mine and it was just between the saints and me, there was something very special about that. And I find myself very nostalgic for that year that it took to write the book. So I imagine that I'm going to want to try to do something like that again.
There might be a part two then. Or well,
let us know. We'll
definitely let us know because I would love to see that. There are so many saints and so many stories. Thank you so much for being with us, Kimberly. This has been wonderful. Really wonderful.
Thanks so much for having me on.
We want to thank Kimberly for being with us here today. This has been just great. The book, just the opportunity to read the book preparing for this was fabulous for me. Some of my favorite saints really enjoyed this. The courage of families in raising these saints, very inspirational for Catholic homeschool moms. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please go to wherever you listen to podcasts and like and subscribe. Give us that wonderful 5-star rating. If you don't like the 5-star rating, don't give us one at all, please. We don't settle for less than 5 stars. And thank you and God bless you.
God bless you. Happy homeschool. Hi, this is Mary Ellen. I hope you enjoyed the episode with Kimberly Begg, Catholic mom of 5, wife, attorney, and now author. We are delighted at the Stay at Homeschool Mom podcast to be able to give away a free copy of her book, Unbreakable, Saints Who Inspired Saints to Moral Courage. All you have to do is find the post on our Facebook page. That's the Stay at Homeschool Mom podcast Facebook page. Find the post that features this episode, give it a like, and give us a comment, and you will automatically be entered to win. We're closing the comments on Monday, and we will announce the winner on Tuesday. And then we'll DM you to get all the details about shipping. So thanks very much for listening. We really appreciate it. God bless and happy homeschool.